I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
And now we're pleased to bring you our feature presentation.
Yes, it's time once again for Radio Free X-Man.
What's Radio Free X-Man?
We've got 11,000 people at NASA trying to figure that out right now.
Radio Free X-Man's beloved cast of broadcast entertainers are back.
You all know people like this. You may be people like this.
Now, the charming and delightful president of X-Man Mortgage and host of Radio Free X-Man, Bob.
Your head is freakishly large.
Brooks.
And freakishly back, I might add, coming at you from the freakish...
I think your back is fairly normal.
And it's
well,
not hairy,
yeah,
though.
If you don't...
Thank God for that.
If you don't take into account the braided back hair that has a little...
No, that's you, Bobby.
At the bottom.
Mr. Toe Ring Wearer. Real men do not wear toe rings.
It only began to bother me when parts of it began to turn gray.
I was worried we wouldn't have anything to talk about.
But the braids are held together just fine with his earwax.
And I have it on good authority from the girls at yoga that these will help my uterus to drop out more eggs.
Because you don't have enough of a feminine, three quarters as it is.
The brewing frog's uterus goes front and center.
He brews, he ovulates, who knows?
Next week, more myths and legends on Radio Free X-Man.
That's right.
As I was saying, on the subject of mortgage, we're coming at you from this...
the place where we're about to smash that phone with a hammer.
No, you can answer, it's okay. I mean, we don't have anything else to do.
It's better than Robbie's back
exceptionally
hair.
Valuable
I told you not
time.
To call me hair. Coming at you from the Soviet Gulag facilities in wonderful North Champions Forest. Coming from Kingwood, it only took 3 hours.
Congratulations, you've survived FM 1960 on a market day.
I only caught 50% of the 348 stop lines.
Yeah. What was that line from SOB where you got TV show,
Loretta Swit.
In the whole body cast, you know, whining at the people in the ambulance because they couldn't get her to whatever it was fast enough. I could have made better time in a covered wagon, she yells.
Well, that's what you get for broadcasting from an undisclosed location.
That's right.
We are undisclosed.
We producers profit handsomely when we have our own studios at home, in addition to the expensive and lavishly furnished News Talk 1070 studios.
That's right. We're talking to his little talk box, which is right next to his ham radio.
And Bob's using my Mr. Microphone.
Broadcast over any FM car radio.
Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later.
Right next to all of his Star Wars figurines.
We'd like to send out a note of thanks to Dick Cheney, who is in the bathroom right now. Get out of there, Dick,
and get your hands off that shot.
That's right. Well, wait a minute. Let me go get my green helmet first.
You know what really drives me crazy is these idiot, ignorant liberals who still are writing about that incident, and they'll say things like, he shot the man with buckshot. If he'd shot him with buckshot, he wouldn't have had a chest left. Any fool who doesn't know the difference between buckshot and birdshot, first of all, should not be allowed to live in Texas.
This is my kind of woman here.
And second of all...
You see, they had to ship
if you're going to write about something, have some vague idea what you're writing about. If you tried to shoot Dove with buckshot...
I'm starting to like her more myself.
Some little bits of goo left over. Yeah.
I found this foot.
People get peppered with birdshot all the time. They go home and their wives pick it out of their bottoms with the tweezers.
Note to staff and cast of broadcast entertainers on the program, if you thump on that expensive table in Dave's lavishly furnished studio, it makes the microphones make funny noises. So
don't do that.
In the meantime, give me a Slurpee,
table
hold the buckshot.
That could be like a new musical group.
Yeah, baby, yeah!
If you're going to do it, take off your shoe and do it right like Nikita Khrushchev.
Pomitenko do that spendoy bezhopad nifty Maria Sharapova Martina Navratilova.
You were talking about Green Helmet, and the Brewing Frog and I had a fun time with Green Helmet last week on the program.
Yeehaw. Oh, and I even have a recording of Green Helmet's voice. This is Salam Daher, Green Helmet, talking dead serious now on the scene of the terrible, horrible, made-up tragedy at Kana.
So here I'm thinking Green Helmet sounds an awful lot like one of those men in drag, one of those fake grannies on Monty Python's Flying Circus, but the Brewing Frog is thinking about rebuilding Kana as a mortgage lender.
Boy, what do you think comp rates are on those buildings over in Beirut right now, anyway?
Oh, don't be mean.
Well, you know, given that Iran has promised an unlimited amount of funds to Hezbollah to rebuild Lebanon, all this ceasefire has done is strengthened Hezbollah's position. Also, ceasefire means Israel goes back to Israel and Hezbollah gets to be rearmed by Syria and Iran. All they've done is help the terrorists more and made people more beholden to the terrorists for their housing and shelter and education.
And on that subject, aren't they basically in Israel crying for Olmert's blood?
Sure. I think maybe 3% of Israelis in a poll this week approved of the war and how it went.
They want to give him a vote of no confidence.
No competence?
No, yeah. Well, either.
Well,
take your pick.
Look for it real soon.
It's coming. Who knows? By the time this program hits the air.
Where's Bibi Netanyahu going to be in all of this?
Front, center, and at the top when it's all over, I guarantee
it. They're just too small of a country, and they are surrounded by too much weaponry.
And giving up land never works.
Well,
all
the Syrians
narrow their... make it harder to defend themselves with no buffer areas.
The Syrians are getting ready to try to take another buffer area, the Golan Heights, which they've coveted all these many decades, and they've got their army lined up on the Syrian side, and the Israeli army has stations on the other side, and right now they got their arms folded staring at each other, so this thing could get way out of control in a very short time.
I don't think the Syrians are going to do that for all the tea in China.
Well, not unprovoked. They don't have the guts.
Well, they've tried.
Well, they got the guts. I don't think they have the strength.
Well, they can cause a provocation because Israel's the only country in the world that is not allowed to defend itself.
Cause a provocation. All they got to do is attack.
I'm sorry, but Spain starts launching rockets over the Pyrenees into France, and then comes over and well, we all like shooting French soldiers because it's easy. It's but still
the back being a wide target.
and take a few more captive. And you think even France is not going to retaliate? Please.
We're a little carnivorous here.
They expect to defend themselves. Every other country in the world, it's all right to defend yourself when someone crosses your borders and attacks you, except
Israel. But hold on. You are missing a nuance, if I may use the John Kerry word.
I didn't know you knew that word.
And that is, the Spaniards weren't actually shooting into France. People that maybe the
Spaniards
gave succor to.
The Basque side were shooting into France.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And yet, I'm going to go out on a limb here and think the French would somehow hold the Spanish responsible because they're operating with impunity from Spanish territory.
Well, the answer France would probably give is to deport all of its own Jews, unfortunately, saying they were the actual cause of the problem.
They did an awfully good job of it, though, when they opened their doorways for the Nazis. They're the only country that gleefully turned over their Jewish citizens to the Nazis.
Yeah, they did.
They did it with relish.
And some béarnaise sauce and a little gray poupon.
And a pickle on top.
Jerry took the word
Jerry gets
my
the assist on that one.
The previous, by the way, was an entirely hypothetical scenario. We do not know yet of any Basques who have lobbed rockets into France.
Yeah, but don't go out getting any ideas.
They make a lovely pie.
If there is any breaking news on that subject, we will be the first to tell you if it's on Sunday at 3 p.m.
I guess I would sum up this thought with something that I saw on Instapundit. What if Israel were to lay down its arms versus what if Hezbollah were to lay down their arms? Hezbollah et al. And folks like that. There'd be peace in the Middle East.
No question.
Okay. If Israel did, there'd be another super-duper mega-genocide.
There's a bloodbath, and all the Jews are gone as soon as they stop defending themselves. And everybody knows this.
Everybody knows this.
And yet, leading the pack on the left is our own press, who struggle every day to put human... face and human life and human experience on the most inhuman of people, and to try to morally balance the scales between them and a decent, upstanding group of people who just want to be left alone to do their thing.
Well, the problem is they're so busy putting a human face on everything that they forget that there's this thing called human nature.
Isn't there a great song by Spock's Beard about that?
Isn't insanity defined as doing the same thing over and over and expecting there to be a different result?
Yeah. All right, where are you going with this, tax guy?
Well, the fact is that every single time there has been a truce, every single time there has been a ceasefire, every single time Israel has made a concession, who violates the truce? Who infiltrates, who attacks, who launches more bombs, who blows up more civilians on buses? It's not the Israelis. It's always started back up again. by Hamas and Hezbollah and all of those other groups.
If I might, just, you know, roll this entire train right off the tracks. Not like that doesn't happen all the time. But, you know, consider. Now, in the past, that's happened because you've had, the likes of, fantastic statesmen such as Bad King Billy and, our oh-so-fantastic Annapolis graduate Jimmy Carter.
Yeah. Man, why would you bring that up in Annapolis in the same breath?
Yeah. What did Rick Ober say about him? Anyway,
X-Man
but
went to Annapolis.
Consider. Now, we've got Bush leading things. We got Rice, his handpicked Secretary of State, who ought to know better, going to the UN and making just utterly, what are you thinking deals?
They're not
expecting,
thinking.
Well, what I have to wonder is, and it's like for a long time I've given, Condi Rice the benefit of the doubt because, she's bright. Oh, she's smart. Oh, she's just doing that for the benefit of the world press.
I'm getting weak on Condi Rice right now.
Boy,
I
cannot.
Me too, and I've been very pro-Condi, but
yeah,
I'm
exactly.
Really disappointed
I can't, it's just gone beyond, okay, they've got to have some kind of ulterior plan here or something.
Mm-hmm.
Some reason they're doing this. And I, for the life of me, I can't see what they've got in mind.
X-Man went to Annapolis, really?
You didn't know that?
Can you believe X-Man that?
Went to Annapolis.
It's amazing
U.S.
what a
Naval graduate,
all
5 years active
is,
duty.
You are darn lucky you went in and did your time and got out, because if you were 20 years younger and did that now, you might get a billet on board the USS Jimmy Carter.
Well, X-Man here did two tours in the Persian Gulf.
Peanut Drive, USS Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, really. It's like I know they make...
On the USS Raleigh.
They make bubbleheads go through some pretty crazy, psychological things. How long can you stay locked in a closet? 6 months? But it's like, okay, we're going to put you on the Jimmy Carter. It's like, no, I'm sorry. Everybody's going to wash out of that one. It's like, I can't take the pressure.
If I have to smile for 5 more minutes.
Oh, God.
That would be the one part of a military record that the best of American military men would not lay claim to is service on the Jimmy Carter.
Golly.
I remember seeing...
It's a lovely white ship.
Yeah, when the the yellow stripe. Yeah, no, the CO of the poor boat was actually on there. It's like just saying. It's like, yeah, they named the boat after him. I mean, it's not like we're like fans of his or anything. It's like yeah, what a job.
Don't interview me. I'm getting off this rust bucket as quick as I can.
Right. Now your first command. Do you have anything else?
That's why I've been transferred to the USS Sith Lord. Thank you.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
I am your father.
Speaking of mortgage? No, speaking of Jimmy Carter.
And on the subject of mortgage, speaking of Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, really.
I'm sure he had a mortgage at some point in time.
Somebody who mortgaged any vestige of, perceived intelligence he may once have had.
God bless him.
Well, it only goes to show that formal education is not necessarily indicative of one's intelligence.
Well, indeed. I seem to remember.
Well, I know plenty of people with vast formal education who are dumb as stumps.
Until you just said that, I was thinking, there's a girl with the formal education.
Well, no, you can have a formal education and still be a bright individual.
You may have just committed
They're not
grave.
Mutually exclusive. I just don't think one is the definition of the other.
Righteous. You may have just committed grave injustice against stumps, I'm afraid.
Righteous.
Well, I mean the kind that are sort of rotted out by termites.
Speaking of Jimmy Carter, it's been a long time since anyone's talked about that abortion of a mission to Tehran in 1979.
Oh, art thou generous.
Brewing Frog, I think you probably have the best recollection of it. I read the book about Ross Perot's mission that came shortly thereafter and went very much better. But see if you can remember us that mission.
Well, just I remember a good anecdote from the Charlie Beckwith's after action report.
Mm-hmm.
And Beckwith was the commander, essentially the first guy that put together Delta Force, and he was regarded at the time as America's best professional shooter. So this is the man they put in charge of this thing.
Okay.
Now, the thing that I thought was most indicative of the mindset of the Carter administration and its people versus...
Which is the reason I brought this up, because it carries well over into management of conflict that we're talking about now.
Oh, indeed, yes, because the mindset is still there. But here we are getting to it. Now, that Beckwith, now he's a shooter. He's a good, you know, in case of, you know, war, break glass, this kind of guy. The one you want in there who's going to defeat the enemy with the, you know, the MacGyver, like, I need a hairpin, some Elmer's glue, and I'll make a nuclear bomb. There, you know, no problem.
Wusses can sleep at night because rough men like this are out guarding
exactly,
our...
Exactly. Ready to do violence on their behalf. Mm-hmm. So, here's Beckwith in the field. Now, they're at Desert One. They got troops. They got helicopters. They got everything. They're ready to, you know, pile into the helicopters and head into downtown Tehran, where, yep, you know, the current president of Iran, Ahmadinejad, is holding our, you know, embassy people hostage.
Wouldn't it be nice to kill him back then?
Yeah,
you
funny
know?
How Mike Wallace didn't ask him anything about that, but that's a whole
nother... He was telling us what a good-looking man he was.
Oh, yeah, really. It's a Tiger Beat interview
Did
with
like
Mike Wallace.
You like that man crush there?
Cruising. Oh, my gosh, I'm surprised he didn't get a handful of Iranian buttocks there while he was...
We haven't seen the unedited tape just
That's
yet.
True. Maybe he did. Maybe he did.
Really. So did Mike Wallace take Viagra? So anyway, back to the after action report. Beckwith and his deputy commander are on the ground. Now, they have a radio link with National Command Authority, you know, mm-hmm, James Earl Carter. Now, his Secretary of State was Warren Christopher. Well, Warren Christopher's there in the room with him.
Yeah.
Now, at the time, Beckwith was saying, okay, Mr. President, we're fixing to saddle up. We're going to head downtown. We're going to shoot a bunch of these bastards. We're going to bring our people out of there.
Christopher came back to haunt us later with Bill Clinton.
Oh,
right?
Yes. Okay. But this is the part that's just, it fills me with sheer amazement even now. Now, this, you know, Christopher is a guy who, he's Secretary of State. He's, you know, longtime diplomat, and he's, you know, well-versed in all these various things. Been an old Washington player for a while. Well, yep, he gets on the radio in front of Carter and says to Beckwith, you know, here's a commander in the field, locked and loaded, face painted, ready to go downtown and shoot him up. And he says, Colonel, can you just, like, shoot him maybe in the arm or the leg? We don't want you to kill anybody. You know, and
spoken by a man who has obviously never touched a firearm in his life, other than to say, ooh, that's icky.
Yeah, you got to imagine Beckwith looking at his deputy commander going,
is this a joke?
What the hell? You know, well, okay, so yeah, and so Clinton makes this guy a Secretary of State. You know, it's the same people. And literally, I look at, you know, some idiot like Ned Lamont, you know, whose message is, you know, we have to flee. We can't
Ned
do this
Lament.
War thing.
Yeah.
This mindset has not only taken root, but it's come to fruition in the modern Democratic
it's
Party.
It's been lurking around for a very long time, though, this leftist fear of violence, this fear of taking charge and getting the job done.
I cannot
Because
think.
We might hurt someone's feelings.
Oh, well,
the
my
problem
goodness,
is what
yes.
you're willing to give up when you fear violence, when you... Because peace is not simply the cessation or absence of violence. It's not.
It's not peace at all. It's oppression and bordering on slavery in a lot of cases.
Right.
I couldn't think of a more dangerous set of people to be in charge of things at this juncture in history than the modern left.
And guess who's listening? Guess who's being listened to by Condi Rice? And that's old Brent Scowcroft.
Brent Scowcroft,
from
yes,
the first
who was
Bush administration.
The utter bane of the first Bush administration. Mr. Oh, we must keep the status quo. We can't allow anything bad to happen. We have to keep everything the same.
There's a Zbigniew Brzezinski, Henry Kissinger crowd from way back when is lurking around and influencing policy now. In fact, I hear that... gosh, what was his name? I just met Brent Scowcroft.
Yeah, not the one with the Princeton Tiger tattooed in his butt.
Look, I tried too hard to remember Zbigniew Brzezinski. Everything else was a total loss after that. But Scowcroft has been actually sending messages and making phone calls to congresspeople and generally stirring up a fuss and causing all kinds of trouble, trying to influence everyone to put pressure on the administration to change the way they're handling this thing.
And the administration is too worried about being popular and making everyone happy and everybody think they're good guys instead of doing what has to be done to protect this country and to make it a safe and free nation.
That's and right, Israel,
folks.
Too.
Bring back James Baker.
Well, if Clinton had the sense God gave to turn it and hadn't been so busy humping interns, then he would have kept James Baker
Again,
as Secretary
a
of State.
A grave insult to an innocent vegetable. And
I didn't.
And
point.
I didn't mean Bill.
Hardly innocent, at least.
Yeah, he's going to turn 60 this month. Happy birthday, you worthless lunk.
Yeah, and he doesn't look a day over 70. Actually, Clinton looks like he just saw a painting of himself in the attic for the first time.
That's the guy who Viagra was made for.
Okay, now I'm just feeling ill.
Yeah, really. And as the tax goddess claws her eyes out.
No, just my ovaries.
Would you like one of my toe rings?
Robbie, I love you to death, but I gotta tell you, I hope to never touch anything that's been on your toes.
Then you'll never walk a mile in my shoes.
Thank God.
People are scratching their heads all over the Houston area going, was this like an accidental studio session that somehow got on the air? I mean, what is this?
Good Lord, what is this smut you're listening to?
Yeah, my father's comment when he heard it was, what exactly are you trying to accomplish again?
They're very good at what they do, but what is it that they do?
Exactly.
Well, whatever it is, it's sponsored, paid for, but not catered by...
No, we catered today.
They did indeed cater.
We did. These would be delicious spring rolls from Nitinoy. And by the way, Ixman is mortgage broker license 30065. There, legal, taken care of.
And his telephone number is?
281-813-0509.
Ixman Mortgage answers that darn phone, especially at 2 a.m. And it's always fun to call Bob on that number and find out what it is he's doing. And if you get a rational answer, that means he was awake, so you really want to know what it was he was doing.
I'll just hand the phone to the sheriff next to me.
Through the grate.
Yeah, really?
Well, hurry up and call now. Operator is standing by.
That number again.
281-813-0509.
So on yet another in the seemingly endless line of X-Man family vacations, the tax goddess finds herself semi-submerged in a beautiful creek not far from the teeming metropolis of Wimberley, Texas.
And I was sitting in the creek. It's only about a foot deep. I had my legs up on top, my feet up on top of one of the many, many rocks.
Taking in a little sun and all that stuff.
Yeah, I got my book, and it's so quiet and peaceful out there that three deer actually came out of the woods, and one, which is a little fawn, came out into the water and was maybe 20 feet away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it realizes that there's someone in there, and it just
then
watches
the buck came
me.
Out, the buck came out and said, you know, you're in our area of the river.
No, but Mom was on the
Don't make me go ask Mr. Wolf.
Hill, and then there was another one a little farther on the hill, and then the fawn, rather, was in the water, and it was really cool.
Wow. I had a friend who lived in a house that was just south of the dam of Lake Conroe where the river would come down behind in the trees, and there was a fawn that was growing up in a little family of deer in his backyard, and they would lure it up with breakfast cereal. And they got that fawn to the point where it would actually come into their kitchen and eat breakfast cereal out of their hand. And they called it Bambi. And one day I was visiting, and they said, hey, Dave, come in the kitchen. I went in there. There's this little ringed fawn with the juvenile fur patterns, you know, that they lose when they get older, the little rings for disguise. And it took Cheerios out of my hand, and I petted it. It was like a family pet. Then they found out it was a boy, and it grew some little nubs and got aggressive, and then no one went anywhere near it again. It just would stand up and knock your eye out like one of those boxing kangaroos.
I discovered the beer in the refrigerator. Yeah. It was all over after that.
And then, you know, Bambi found its way to their freezer.
You know, in Wimberley, where we just were, they call them yard meat.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, it's like Julie's...
Well, there's so many of them.
Julie's older sister. Yeah, exactly. There's no predators up there. She lives in Connecticut. And it's just like... He says... And, you know, we tried to do yard work. We tried to put plants in the front yards of the house that looked nice. And the deer just eat them up before you even get them out of the pot, seemingly.
They're not afraid of anyone because of gun control.
Well, exactly.
Well,
and I asked her, I says,
they
are
they... They eat people's hibiscus.
Well, I asked her, are they afraid of people? She says, no. It's just like I could kill them on the head. I hit them on the head with a hammer.
Yeah, but if you do that, the liberals will start screaming for hammer control. These evil hammers are only good for one thing.
I don't know. The ones in Wimberley are still... I mean, you can't get too near. And as soon as my book moved just a little bit, the three of them took off, but I mean, one morning Bob walks outside and there's 15 deer in the lot next to the house we were staying at.
I mean, those are those great nature moments that you remember for the rest of
your life.
That
was really
neat.
And I thought, all I could think was, gosh, I wish the kids were here, but they were over visiting Ixman's brother.
Right.
Playing with the dogs.
Yeah, the deer blew out of there. They left their ice chest behind.
Really? Did they at least have decent beer?
it was deer beer.
Yeah, really. Sorry. Antler ale. Oh, no. God, this again?
Well, it was low alcohol, so it was near deer.
I remember, I'm talking about remembering for the rest of your life, when I was a little kid, maybe 14, okay, a big kid. 14. I was in Central Texas, and I just kind of went on one of those walkabouts like Crocodile Dundee. I had a summer day to myself and just went wandering off down the road, and I stepped into a clearing in between a bunch of trees, and at the same moment that I stepped into the clearing, a red fox bounded into the clearing, and he and I were face to face from about 10 feet. And he had made enough noise arriving, because he was moving at speed, that he didn't hear me. And so when he jumped into the clearing and I stepped in, it was the exact same moment, and he suddenly realized I was there. And there was about a 3-second pause where I looked at him and he looked at me, and he just couldn't believe that he had just jumped into a clearing with a human being in it. And finally he went, I better get out of here. And whoop, he was gone. But, you know, that was more than 30 years ago, and it's like a film in my brain. I remember every moment of it.
What was it that happened on the driving range?
Yeah,
with the demigoddesses?
Yeah, the driving range. That would be a very interesting discussion. Bambi runs across the diving range. $30 to the
putting range, whatever the heck it was with the
golf course.
There is a story here somewhere, isn't there?
There is. It was the golf course, and Tori, for whatever reason, that's one of the tax demigodlets, who's getting into golf, who's very good.
They're both very good, actually.
They're both very good. Decides to park the golf cart halfway down the hole. I don't know, and then start walking back. Okay. And we're all on the tee box, and she's probably about 150 feet away, and along comes a fawn, and it is screaming across the...
Green.
Going top speed.
Top speed. And we're screaming at her, look around, turn around, because it's running right next to her. If Ida goes in the other force, she turns around.
I thought it nearly ran into her.
Ran into her. No, she didn't have to jump back. She barely noticed it.
Leave some cloven-hoofed footprints to mess up the putting trail for the next guy.
Right, but enough about letting them on.
Jokes just don't work when you mumble the punchline.
Well, you know, the littlest tax demigoddess had a tournament, a golf tournament, 2 weeks ago at Kingwood, and she won for her age group.
Ooh,
for girls.
By how many strokes? Tiger Woods margins here?
13.
13
strokes.
Holy cow.
They played 2 days of 6 holes each, and she won by 13 strokes.
Yeah, she's doing so well, we decided to tell the other players where the tournament was.
And stop using the blowgun full of Nembutal-laced darts on the other players. Yeah. Really? Oh, there goes another one, thud.
Mommy, you know, I can't feel my left side.
Well, against the best advice of broadcast professionals and those who have our best interests at heart, this program will be back next week at the same
Ix time, same Ix channel. Ix time!
Why do you have to do it so weird?
Because the rest of the show is completely conventional.